Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman, and today I have a very special guest that I'm absolutely delighted to have a conversation with today. This gentleman is Tim Guinea, who is often very well known as an actor and a director, and has been in many feature films, over 200 feature films, and 200 movies, and in miniseries and episodes for television. But right now, Tim is really bringing a lot of attention and his articulation and his spirit to helping our planet, and to especially to bring the information that we desperately need to understand climate change and its inevitable after effect if we do not take heed, and what we can do to make a difference. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Can you give us a little bit of understanding of what you're doing? Of course, thank you for all the work that you've done as an actor, because I've actually really appreciated the work that you do. And I have to say, I love your masterclass videos. Those are They had me giggling. But let's get to the subject at hand. So Tim is a leader and mentor for former Vice President Al Gore's Climate Reality Project and many other things around the nation and probably globe. So tell us a little bit about what got you into that, Tim, and where do you find the focuses that we really need to pay attention to now?
It's a bit of a long question. I started as a kid. I was 13 years old. I got a letter from Jacques Cousteau, who, for younger listeners, was a very famous oceanographer who had television programs. And anyhow, in 1976, I was 13, I got this letter from Jacques Cousteau detailing what the scientists were thinking about climate change at that time. Which is, you know, he was predicting the melting of the polar caps, the dissolution of the glaciers, rising sea levels, all these things that, you know, we've seen come to pass. And it terrified me. It's funny, too, when I tell folks that, they sometimes are amazed that he was talking about it in 1976. We actually know that scientists like, there was a woman named Eunice Foote in the 1850s who were already talking about climate change back then. There's a newspaper article I have from 1921 from New Zealand talking about climate change because of the burning of coal in New Zealand in 1921. So, you know, this has been around for an awfully long time, and we've been ignoring it for an awfully long time. So I've sort of been an environmentalist my entire life, several years back, I had heard about a thing called the Climate Reality Project. The Climate Reality Project was started by former Vice President Al Gore in 2005. I think he realized he couldn't make as many speeches as he needed to make, so he started training people to have conversations the way he was. And I went to this training, and for me, that organization, which they're now over 21,000 people trained all around the world, that organization has been phenomenally powerful in terms of giving me kind of the tools to communicate the crisis, but also helping me have avenues of real action. The tricky thing with me with the climate crisis is that, you know, we can feel overwhelmed by it, and to a certain degree, we should feel overwhelmed by it. The situation is terrible. The thing that most often happens with people is they hear the information, they get overwhelmed, and then they don't take the antidote to being overwhelmed, which in my case, I've realized is taking action.
Right.
That's the only antidote to this thing. Is to take action. If you're depressed around it, you've got to be active. And we all need to be active. So I hope that answered your question a little bit.
It does. And Tim, and thank you for that explanation, because I think you're absolutely correct. When people hear the dire straits that we're in, they either freeze up or they get angry or, any number of things. But as certainly you're speaking often, I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, on what is happening with industry and different things that the individual person might not have any direct control over. What can we do as individuals that would begin to start to help us believe that we're making a difference and actually show us that we are?
So the answer to what can we do as individuals, I always answer, what can't you do?
Exactly.
The truth of the matter is almost every decision we make has an effect on the climate crisis. And there are things that can seem terribly small, like, turning off a light when you leave a room or eating less meat, all of those things that feel like nothing. Well, I'll just say a couple of things. Number one, behavioral psychologists show clearly that if somebody takes a small action, they're much more likely to take a bigger and a bigger action. If you turn the light off when you leave the room, you're much more likely to write a letter to your senator and to run for office. There's a sort of a snowball effect, because we begin having confidence in our power. A big part of this equation also is understanding we are not powerless at all.
Yes.
I think it's helpful to certain entities for all of us to think we're powerless, but we're really not. Years ago I was lobbying in Washington, D.C., and there was a school shooting. And I said to one of the staffers at one of the senator's offices, are you getting a lot of phone calls from people who are for gun control and people who are gun advocates? And they said, no, not really. People aren't really calling. I think the truth of the matter is that so many people feel so disengaged from their power that they don't engage the government. And the people who do engage the government have a disproportionate voice. So that's a real thing. We all need to get engaged. For God's sakes, vote. I'm not telling anybody what party to vote for, because the truth of the matter is there are heroes and villains as far as climate change on both sides of
exactly,
the aisle.
Yes.
This is not a political thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a survival crisis. It's, in my opinion, a moral crisis. It's all kinds of things. But political polemics don't come into it. And just one last thing on the tiny small action front. I believe that, right now we're seeing an abdication of responsibility by the federal government. They have really failed us. What's heartening is that, first of all, governments around the world have not stopped acting on the climate crisis.
Correct.
Denmark this week said that they're going to be 100% on renewable electricity by 2030, I believe, if I'm remembering the statistics right. There are countries making big leaps forward, even as our federal government is saying it's pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. But what's really heartening is the slack here in the United States seems to be getting picked up by many of the state governments, by county governments, by local governments, and by individuals. I think we need, at every level of society, to be robustly addressing this thing. And partly the way people think about their, retirement holdings. I want to think about climate action. I want a diversified portfolio so that if the federal government fails us, we're still moving forward in lots of other ways. And one of the ways to do that is individual action.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tim. And I really agree with you. And as a mother and a grandmother myself, I recognize that, as you had mentioned, these small things that we can do literally can create a chain reaction by setting an example of what we can do to not be wasteful, to not be overindulgent, to not be all of these things that, mindless action creates devastation sometimes, and we have to be accountable. There's no question about that.
And the flip side sort of on this thing is also recognizing we do need big action. We need action that only the federal government can take, only the state government can take. So while we're engaged in those small actions, it's vitally important that we all stay engaged in bigger ways. Join an environmental, you know, there are great organizations working on this crisis. So
Absolutely.
Join one, get involved.
Absolutely. As you said, little steps take big steps. And, you know, all of this government and leadership are people. You know, it's not some entity in the sky. It's a reality made of people. So I thank you for what you're doing and helping people to understand that. And we really do need to have true leadership, not just self-indulgent, perpetuation of a job. You know, that's a whole other thing. So, Tim, can you please tell us about the Climate Actors that you are the founder of, and what is that doing, and what are you doing, especially, you know, as a public figure? You know, you are recognizable, and I think that it's wise when you're using that, your identification with integrity, that you're using it as a platform to say, you know, yeah, I may be an actor, but I'm also a human being.
Right. So, slight step back. So as part of my work with Climate Reality Project, I give talks sort of all over the world, in North Africa, all over North America. And one of the sort of areas of specialty I have is I like talking to oppositional or underserved audiences. So I've talked to Houston oil industry executives. I spend time every year in maximum security prisons. Part of a concern I have is that one of the ways the environmental movement fails itself is we tend to speak within the environmental bubble. It's much more comfortable for me to go to a Sierra Club meeting and talk about climate change than it is to go talk to some coal miners about it. And yet, that may be the more important conversation.
Right, exactly.
So I gave a talk fairly recently at my manager's apartment for a group of actors and directors. And afterwards, the actress Jane Alexander came up to me and said, you have to do this focused specifically on actors. You've got to create an organization that does that. And I thought about it, and initially my big thought was to your point, which is there are actors who have an outsized soapbox. Now, that's a bit of a double-edged sword, because having an outsized soapbox doesn't mean they should always use it.
That's right.
You have to have real understanding behind your words before you publicly speak on these things, because, you know, the other side will simply say, oh my God, it's another Hollywood lefty or, that's the knee-jerk criticism of people doing that. So my thought was those people with that outsized soapbox need to be educated so that, you know, they can really back up everything they're saying. The second thing, though, that I also realized was, you know, part of acting is really about empathy. If I'm going to play a bad guy, I have to figure out, you know, who that person is and learn to love that character. And that's probably the best thing about acting, and it's what all actors have to do. And it occurred to me that my ability to go into places with people who've never heard about climate change, or who have set up great walls of angry denialism about it, I think has to do with being able to empathetically go into a room, which I think actors can do. So we've started giving talks specifically to actors. We have a big sort of board of directors with Danny Glover and Ed Harris and Cynthia Viro and, you know, all these fancy schmancy actor people on it. Part of Climate Reality, there's a program we have called the 100% Committed Campaign that seeks to get businesses to transition to 100% renewable electricity. We've been having some really great success with getting theaters around the country to do that. We just signed a theater called the Denizen Theater, and the Minneapolis Playwriting Center just signed on. So we're trying to also affect our business the way all businesses need to be affected, and it's interesting and gratifying work, and I'm happy to see the acting community seem to embrace this. So
thank you for that, because I'm really intrigued by the work that you're doing in prison systems. And as you brought the analogy of course, if you're playing a particular character, you have to understand who that person is. And what came to my mind is, you know, we in the prison system, we kind of have a throwaway society. And, you know, there is one thing that connects to everything else. If we don't teach people that they have value and how to be emotionally stable, it would be more likely that, you know, their thinking and other parts of their life are equally out of balance. So if we can help people to understand the gift that their life is, then I think by extension, they would begin to have a more of an appreciation for everything that supports their life. And we have such a lot to do in terms of helping people understand who they are. So we stop doing destructive things.
There's fascinating things with, I mean, when I go in and talk about climate change in the prisons, I often have people who come up to me, not the incarcerated people, but other people who'll say, why do you do that? What agency do those people have? You know? And I don't know that I have an answer. What I do have a sense of is chasing only the people with agency hasn't worked.
That's
right. We need everybody. We need Zamboni drivers and dishwashers and librarians and incarcerated people and, you know, when we really mobilize society, I think we have a chance. You know, there's a wonderful gentleman named Robert Blake, not the actor, but Bob Blake is an Ojibwe guy in Minnesota, and he's involved in a program there that they have for incarcerated people, teaching them to be solar installers. We're going to have a huge need for trained people in that industry to meet the goals we've got to meet. And, you know, there are truths like if you give people, incarcerated folks, skills to have economic wherewithal, you see recidivism rates drop.
Absolutely.
And we were talking about that, and Bob said to me, you know, that's not really the big thing that goes on with our program. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, we take these people that society thinks are nothing, society thinks are zero, and we say to them, here's this climate crisis. It needs to be fixed by you learning to put solar panels on a roof. That's tangibly fixing this, probably in a bigger way than stepping out on the streets and protesting on a level. It's a tangible thing that you are creating the change the world needs. So suddenly, you're giving them purpose. They're going from being societal zeros to heroes. And that's incredibly powerful, especially for so many of these people who, you know, we know that the prisons are disproportionately full of people who came from economic disadvantage, communities of color, groups that have a rougher time right. in our society, you know, than Caucasian people do. So, it's just a powerful, powerful thing to help reassert purpose in folks' lives.
Well, you know, that's really where we need to start. When we start healing who we are, we're going to stop hurting everything. And our living earth is providing everything that we need. And, what you know, the proverbial stop cutting off your nose to spite your face, you know, when we understand there's beauty there that we need to preserve because it is the very essence of what sustains us, and that's,
you know,
so important.
I'm sorry. Please go on.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say there's a funny thing too, because we do need to heal ourselves, but part of the way we heal ourselves is by healing the world around us.
Exactly.
You know, there's sometimes a trap people get into of like, I haven't been to my therapist enough to be really whole and really do things. Well, I think part of the way you become whole, and the way you become healthy is you step out of yourself and into the world.
I agree with you 100%. That's what I mean by appreciation. You know, when you appreciate, you know, the water that you're drinking, which is providing your life, and that by action helps to heal your body. It's a miraculous
liquid.
Right. Gratitude
is the foundation of meaningful action.
Absolutely. So if you would be kind enough to tell us about the work that you're doing with the Climate Institute, what is that? And if you could explain, please.
I sort of can't.
Okay.
It is a new thing that's happening, that's a educational foundation looking at that's a physical structure specifically to educate on climate that's being built somewhere, but it's sort of new, and I'm going to be quiet about it.
Okay. So, but what about the green project placement? I think that's really important.
Yeah. So green product placement is a thing a friend of mine started. She's a prop master in television and movies, and she had this idea, you know, there's a thing called product placement that happens where you're watching a TV show and the lead on the TV show drinks a Coca-Cola. And what usually happens is Coca-Cola will pay that company a certain amount of money to put that Coca-Cola in the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form of advertising that happens. And, you know, you'll see it all through television. You'll see people using different products. So she had the idea, well, why aren't we pushing to have environmental products in our movies and television shows? Why aren't those the things we see people using instead? So her organization, Green Product Placement, seeks to do that. They also will bring these products to sets so that, you know, they're available and they're part of making the film set a more sustainable, safer environment as well. So that's what green product placement does, and it's really extraordinary work, and very proud of her, and she's I think it's doing so well, it's overwhelming her a little, which is great news.
It is great news. Hopefully she gets people helping her, and she's busy as can be.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd like to say that I did meet you at an incredible event called Earth's Call that happened in May of this year, and what was so significant was so many people coming together with the understanding that we have to listen to Mother Earth. And what as you mentioned about the Ojibwe elder, that, you know, really we have to go back and seek and listen to the counsel of Indigenous elders who, you know, for at least 10,000 years have been on the North American continent and have been, you know, truly wisdom keepers. How is it that we reestablish this relationship with the living world? Because we have ignored it for so long. How do we reestablish a real relationship that there is an interaction, not just an action, but an interaction?
Yeah. You know, I was talking to David Suzuki, who's a big environmentalist, lives up in Vancouver. Extraordinary man. But he was talking about, he took his grandson fishing, and his grandson was appalled to learn that fish isn't something that just comes in plastic. His grandson had never seen a fish that didn't come out of the grocery store in one of those styrofoam, you know, trays with the plastic over the top of it.
Right,
And didn't know, there's got to be a way to, you know, it goes back to what you said too about, you know, fundamentally gratitude is what we need.
Yes.
And you can only become grateful if you stop and go, wait a minute, water isn't something that lives in the pipe that sticks out of my sink. You know, it comes from somewhere. I was very lucky as a child. My parents took me up to Quetico Provincial Park, which is on just north of Minnesota. And at the time, the lakes and streams were clean enough that we just drank straight out of them. We didn't boil the water. We didn't do anything, you know. And I'm hard-pressed to think of a place where I would feel really comfortable doing that these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a really big question you're asking.
I
How
know.
Do we create the connection with the earth,
I would like to talk to you about that in the future because I have some ideas.
Good.
So, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Thank you for the work that you do, especially in educating people about our climate, our world, the earth that is our greatest gift, and especially as being an actor and using your imagination and your presence to speak about things that are so important.
I want to challenge your listeners to do one thing today about the climate crisis.
Thank you.
Just do one thing. Don't just listen to this conversation. Go out and take one action.
And then make it two and three and four.
Well, start with one.
Okay.
And then tomorrow do one.
Yeah, okay.
Build on that.
Okay. Well, you know, I like to give people some, you know, things to make it an adventure. when it's like almost like a little game. How do you find the next best thing? How do you find the next thing that you can do? Walk by a street and pick up a piece of trash. Don't just walk by it. You know, I'll share one last little thing. You know, you mentioned about drinking water out of a stream. I happened to be at a gathering with some medicine people in Switzerland, and we were in the mountains, and I was invited to drink from the river, from the water from the river, literally coming from the mountain. And it truly invigorates the body. We don't understand what water is. It is not just a thirst quencher. It is a cleanser. It is a purifier. It is power. It is true power. It is a living being. And when we remember that, we will never look at anything as if it is nothing again. So thank you for your time, Tim. Again, my guest is Tim Ginney, and I want to thank you for all the work that you do on behalf of Mother Earth.
Thank you very much.
It's Elaine Grohman for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. You, too, can go out and make your choices count. Thank you.